on it other than life gets busy. Life handles differently for everyone. And life just sometimes it's brutal. Sometimes it's just such an incredible, just you couldn't be happier. And but that's just that's and faith. The Bible says that God gives every man and every woman a measure of faith, and it's what we do with that faith. It's how we take that faith and how we it's like it's an ingredient in a pie. And we all have the ingredient that's needed to make the pie the way the pie should be, but it's what we do with it. It's how we apply it into that pie or into our lives that makes all of the difference. We've been talking about the book of Joshua, and we've been going through. We started in Joshua chapter 1. We're now in Joshua chapter 14 this morning. And so as we get to the end of this series, we have one more lesson that will be on Joshua chapter 24 about commitment and such, and we'll take care of that at a later date. But the focus of the book of Joshua, if you're reading along with your families, it begins to make a shift in chapter 14. Up until chapter 14, most all of the book of Joshua is focused on Joshua and the events surrounding Joshua. When you get to chapter 14, it begins to take a little bit of a different turn, and we begin to hear of a man named Caleb. Now, Caleb was part of all of this process from the very beginning. When God sent the children of Israel from the land of Egypt to the land of Canaan, which was the promised land that Abraham had been promised by God. So this goes back some 450, 500 years before this lesson this morning takes place. So you have Abraham, who was promised all of this land by God, and then you have Moses. And maybe you've heard of Moses, maybe you haven't heard of Moses, but Moses was the man that God had put in place to bring the children of Israel out of Egypt into this promised land. Moses has now passed away, and Joshua is the new generation leader for the children of Israel. But Caleb was one of those original men that left Egypt with Joshua. Now, because Israel, the first time they came to the banks of the Jordan River, and God says, I want you to send some spies over. So Moses sends spies over, and of those 12 spies, two of them came back and said, we can do this. And the two that came back and said, we can do this, were Joshua and Caleb. And because of their belief and their faith, in a time like that, God says, the rest of them aren't going to be able to see the land. They're not going to be able to taste of the fruit of the land. They're not going to be able to live in the houses in the land and the cities in the land because of their unbelief. So there is a price that we have to pay for unbelief. So the two that God, of the two spies that God said could go in and take the land, would be Joshua and Caleb. Joshua's their leader, and Caleb has just been there for these last 45 years. Now, when we look over the four decades of since we had last heard of Caleb, he was fighting alongside of Joshua. Every battle that Joshua fought, Caleb was there supporting and fighting. People of faith simply don't know how to quit. They never give up. They keep on keeping on. They understand that faith means having persistence. It's persistence. It was persistence in her faith that allowed the woman with the issue of blood to receive her healing. When everyone else was crowding around Jesus and she could not get to him, she was persistent and said, if I can't approach him on foot, I will approach him on my knees. And she fought her way through the crowd, no doubt crawling on her knees to get to Jesus. If you want to be a person of faith, this morning you have a choice. When you don't see God's answer to your prayer right away, you can just wait or you can be persistent. It depends upon the desire, and it depends upon how important your situation is. Some things can't wait. One choice is a passive choice, and one choice is an active choice. But while you wait, I want to encourage you this morning to continue working. We don't just quit while we're waiting. While we're waiting on God, it's not like we're sitting in a waiting room waiting for the doctor to come. We're sitting waiting on God, and God expects a continued level of faith activity coming from us. God wants us to continue to be able to show Him that what we are waiting for, but we are willing to step up and step out at any time. We don't give up even if we don't see the answer. You keep working on your marriage even if things continue to fall apart. You keep working on your job even if you continue to struggle on a job. You keep believing that there's going to be that breakthrough even when you don't see and you don't feel like it. You don't ever give up. So here, as we enter into chapter 14, 45 years later, after God promised Caleb he would make it to the promised land, Caleb declares to Joshua that he desires the hill country where the giants have been seen. Moses had promised it to him all those years ago as they spied out the land. So he has waited 45 years for this day. And he was confident that with the power of God on his side, he would be able to take this tough territory. It was a mountainous territory. It was full of dangers. It was full of giants, no doubt the ancestors to Goliath and such that David would someday face. And yet with all this ahead of him, he still declared, "I want my mountain." You can have the valley, you can have the small hills, but Caleb says, "I want to be able to see all that God has promised to Israel." He had a different level of faith. He had a different perspective, perhaps, than all of the other people had. But the children of God, we have to understand, and we are no doubt, each of us, every day of our lives, are climbing some sort of a mountain. I know the scripture tells us, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death," you don't get valleys unless you have mountains. And spiritually speaking, the children of God always face obstacles in their lives. We've dreamed, we've had dreams, and every dream I've ever had has been an uphill dream. Every goal that I have ever set has been an uphill goal. Most every relationship that has ever been worthwhile in my life has been an uphill relationship, meaning if it's worth it, you will work for it. We look next to the husband or the wife that's sitting perhaps next to you this morning, and you look at them at times and you think, "Has this been worth it?" I tell you, it has been worth every uphill battle for every relationship I've ever had to work for in my life. So if you are a friend of mine and you're sitting here and you're thinking, "Am I an uphill battle for Pastor Roy?" Every relationship has its uphill times. None of us are exempt. Building a business is an uphill battle. right choices. Just simply making the right choices in our life is an uphill battle. You never just wake up uphill. It's not that you go to bed at nighttime and you have all these dreams, you have all these visions, you have all of these things that you want to accomplish in your life. Some may be spiritual accomplishments, some may be physical accomplishments, but you don't just wake up in the morning and you are uphill. It's a process, as so many things in life is. We can wake up. It's never uphill. It's a place that we have to work to get to. But with God's strength, we can overcome our mountains, no matter how rugged the terrain may be. Many times, perhaps, we feel inadequate to face the mountains of our life. And today, we're going to teach some typical issues and some very practical ways in which we can solve them. Proverbs chapter 30, verse 1, the man declares, "O weary, O God, O weary, O God, and worn out." Here we read a proverb where that in this proverb, the man who is writing this is speaking and declares to God, "God, I'm just simply tired." Anybody ever be in their life just simply tired? Sometimes you go to bed tired. You wake up in the middle of the night and you're tired, and sleep fights you, and you get up in the morning at 6 o'clock and you're tired, and you say, "I don't have to go to work today. It's my day off. I'm going to sleep in." And you wake up at 7 o'clock and you're tired. And at 8 o'clock, you're tired. And you're staring at a bowl of Frosted Flakes at 8 o'clock and you're still tired. And you eat a bowl of Frosted Flakes because you need some sugar in you and you're still tired. And lunchtime comes and you're tired. And you wonder, "Why am I so tired today?" Well, what did you do yesterday? How late did you stay up before you went to bed? You see, when you hear someone say that they're tired, and you look at someone and you say, "Wow, Sister Linda, what happened? You look exhausted this morning." It's time that we should not just look in the mirror to see how exhausted perhaps we are, but it's time that we should make a connection with God, and we need to begin to ask God some questions. And that question would be, "God, why am I so tired? Why am I tired? What kind of fatigue am I experiencing?" I'm a firm believer that as Christians, we need to take times to rest that God gives us. Sunday afternoons is a day of rest. Now, I don't know how it is in your family, but in our family, I mean, Sunday afternoons, everybody rested. Even the dog rested. We went home after church. We'd usually go to Burger King in the mall, have a Whopper. Remember those days? We went to Burger Chef for a little bit because we had a Burger Chef in Madison. Anybody remember back when they had the old Burger Chef? There's a few old folks here that loved Burger Chef. Older folks, aging. Beautifully, I might add. And then after that, you went home. You took a nap. I remember times my mom and dad would take the phone off the hook. How many ever did that? Remember those days? Take the phone off the hook. Now you just ignore it. Nobody ignores it. I don't ever see anybody ignore. They're always a few times. I'm a firm believer that we need to rest. I know in my life, in past seasons of my life, I couldn't rest. I had a hard time resting. And part of the reason I had a hard time resting was because I had allowed myself to be programmed a specific way. I allowed society, I allowed that clock that's on the back wall. That clock messes more with my life than anything else ever will. Because we're always up against the clock. You ever notice that? It's a constant pressure. I've got 25 minutes to get this thing done. And I'm rambling. And I've got to stop rambling to get this thing done. And you're sitting there waiting 25 minutes. We got to be heading to the restaurant. And he's rambling. And he's not going to get this done again. That's what I'm talking about by stress. You're stressing me out right now. I'm feeling it. A lot of times I squandered those times of rest. God gave me opportunities. He gave me vacations. And I squandered them. Why? Because I equated rest with laziness. And so many times we do that. We older guys like to do that. Because the young generation, they know how to rest. They always seem like they're resting. You go into a room and they're all laid back. They got to where their phone is out here. And they're talking to somebody over here and they're talking. We read in Genesis. I don't understand why God did this, but he put Adam and Eve in a garden. And the very first thing that Genesis 2:15 tells me that they had to work. They had to work. So this gives me a little bit of an insight that when we get to heaven, we may have to work. But it's not going to be the same kind of work. Just like in the garden, it wasn't the same kind of work. It wasn't supposed to make you tired, Brother Hawk. When God came into the garden in the cool of the evening to talk with Adam, Adam felt very much relaxed and rested because it wasn't the same. It didn't have the burden and the weight of sin and guilt. And I don't think we understand this morning just exactly how heavy our burden can be at times. So they had to work in the garden. They had to take care of the garden. You see, my problem was I equated work at a whole different, I had a whole different definition from work. Work is what gave me my self-value. And most of us men and most of us ladies, we can understand. Ladies, you will slave all day long to create your best recipe for a potluck at church. It will be work to you, but it's not work because you're looking at it differently. You see, there's nothing against work. There's nothing against hard work. But I just got a few questions. This is a little bit of a recap from Wednesday. Have you been working nonstop lately? When I mean nonstop, I mean have you been working your 7, 8, 10 hours at work and you're working overtime, so you're working Saturday mornings perhaps, and then you come home and you got all these other things to do and you're wearing yourself out. I've been there. I still struggle with this. Because what happens when I find myself working nonstop, wearing myself out, I become much more irritable. And you are no different. That's why when sometimes we come into the house of worship and we come into church and we feel the peace and presence of God, we don't feel so peaceful, do we? I'm in a happy voice. I'm just trying to make a point. You understand? How are you this morning, Brother Repka? Don't even ask. You don't want to know. Okay. I won't ask. I don't want to know. I'll leave Brother Repka alone for the rest of the day. See what happens when you become tired. and it's nonstop, and you're looking at that clock, and there's 4 more minutes burned off of it, and you know you don't have enough time now to get done what you have to get done, so you're going to have to skip something. You're wondering, okay, is he really serious here, or is he just making... You see, what happens is you begin to make hasty decisions. Esau, this really hit me as I was putting this lesson together. Esau, it wasn't the soup that his brother made that sold or he traded the birthright for. He came in because he was tired. He wasn't thinking rational, and he made a quick decision. And how many times in our lives have we made quick decisions? Because we just wanted to make a decision and get it over with because I'm tired of dealing with it. And when we're tired, there's all kinds of emotions that go on inside of our minds. We like to say emotions are in our heart. Emotions start up here in our brain in a spot about the size of a golf ball. And when you look at that little golf ball size spot, sometimes 40-hour weeks can feel like 80-hour weeks because of all of the emotional energy that we've expended at work. No one hears it all the time, but when we have problems, most of us, we do like to talk about our problems. Some of that conversation can get pretty ugly at times. I've been in some really stressing, ugly conversations over the last 6 months. And you think about this, and sometimes as we part from our conversations, and I walk away, and I go into my office, and I close the door, and I sit down, and I'm thinking, good Lord, how in the world does somebody get themselves into a situation like that? You know how you get yourself into situations like that? You lay up all night long thinking about it. You can't solve it, and it eats your lunch because you can't solve it. You're not willing to turn to God for any type of advice. God forbids you pray a prayer because it's going to sound so ugly when you pray it. Well, listen, let me introduce you to a new concept this morning. That's the concept of ugly prayer. I want to spend a few minutes actually talking about ugly prayer. We think sometimes that our prayer time has to be consistent. I've got to pray every day at 6 a.m. or God won't hear me. And then it doesn't happen at 6. It doesn't happen at 7. And you get aggravated at yourself. And instead of that eloquent voice that comes out because you expect God to expect eloquence from your mouth, something ugly comes out and you don't feel like communicating. Let me ask you something. Have you ever had an ugly conversation with anybody? We've all had ugly conversations. And sometimes we need to have those ugly conversations with God because sometimes that's what He wants to hear. He doesn't want to hear your eloquence. He doesn't want to hear something that's punctual and it's built around a time clock or a time frame. Sometimes He wants to just hear us say, "Dear God, can you help me in the mess I just made?" It's an ugly prayer. My prayers, I'm sorry for all of you King James lovers, but my prayers don't always sound like King James eloquent English. Ugly prayer. 1 Peter 5:7 tells me we can cast all of our cares upon Him. Cast. Casting is just throwing it out there. I can take all of my cares I can take all of my problems. I can take all of my stress, everything that has got me to the mess that I'm currently in, and say, you know what, God? I can't deal with this anymore. And I know it's not eloquent, but you know what, Lord? There you go. It's all yours. I should have warned them, I guess. There's four peppermints over there, guys. Peppermint prayers. It's Christmas. That's what they should smell like. You see, ugly prayers give vent to all of those worries. You can pray ugly when you're worried about things. All of those hurts, all of those threats, all of those troubles. Job had some ugly prayers. Job 16:7 was an example of a really ugly prayer. He says, "Surely, God, you have worn me out. You have devastated my household." Psalm 69:3, "I'm exhausted." This is a psalmist talking to God. "I'm exhausted from crying for help. My throat, Lord, my throat is parched. My eyes are swollen because I've been weeping so long, because I've been sitting here waiting. Lord, are you ever, ever going to show up in my lifetime, please?" Those are ugly prayers. Lamentations, my word, Lamentations is the picture book for ugly prayers. Just the sound, the name Lamentations sounds ugly. Lament, wailing, moaning. But sometimes that's just all we can get out. That's all we got in us. Because we're so tired. We're so worn out that there's nothing else. There's nothing else. I look around here and sometimes it's hard to encourage everybody. But I think we just went through Thanksgiving. We had such an incredible, apologize, it was a little longer, but we had an incredible Wednesday night Thanksgiving service. So many things to be thankful about. So many things to thank God about and how he's helped and moved in the lives of our brothers and sisters. I'm thankful for God's blessings on my life, but I'm equally thankful for God's blessings on the lives of so many of you. It just gives me testimony. Sometimes we have a tendency to doubt what God does for us, but when we hear it coming from someone else and we watch their life change and we watch their countenance change, it gives me so much more faith and confidence in God for whatever I'm dealing with. So we need to be thankful. We need to focus on the blessings that we've received from God. But we typically, because it's our human nature, when we get worried and we get tired and we're weary, we don't ever seem to focus on anything positive. It's the negative that we hone in on. It's just like that negative sign, just it's like an attractant. And God's saying, listen, if you would just take a minute out of your hectic, struggling day. It's hectic and you're struggling already. So you got nothing to lose. And turn, hear me, this very seldom do I put things in bright yellow highlight in my notes, but I got two spots now. Turn off the noise. Turn it off. For most of us, that means turn your cell phone off. I was thinking of this the other day. I was getting ready to leave the house, and I'm like, oh, I don't have my phone. And then I thought, oh, I don't care. And then I thought, oh, what if I have a problem? And then I thought, oh, for most of my life I've had problems, and I didn't have a cell phone. I don't care. So I headed out, and I went about my day, and I had no means of communication. And I didn't care. And I felt really good. The trees seemed to be just more vibrant. The dirt on the road had an astonishing beauty to it. The manure, as it splattered on the side of my truck, it didn't smell quite so bad. Because I turned off the noise. I said I turned off my ears, not my nose, okay? So we live out in the country, and I cannot wash my truck and make it home without it getting dirty again. So any day I can travel on a road from my house to town and I don't get dirt on my truck is a good day. There was no noise. It was peaceful. The sun was shining. And I went into a restaurant, and I sat in my typical normal corner booth. And the waitress comes over and says, your buddy Rick was just here. You just missed him. I said, that's okay. I don't have a way to call him anyway and say, hey, I'm here. Come back for a few minutes. And I sat and listened the whole time. I enjoyed my breakfast. I sat and listened to two ladies yelling into a phone, talking to someone else from Las Vegas. And I heard all about their vacation, and I heard all about how they lost at Jackpot and all of these, and I'm thinking to myself, I wanted to just stand up and say, can you turn that thing off? You see, Matthew 6:25-34, we're not going to turn there, but it gives us kind of an overshot. To be spiritually and emotionally healthy, it's important to focus on the important things in life. That which is important. And the problem that we have in society now is that every time our phone buzzes, we feel it's important. And I had no plan. This is not even in my notes. But you see, it's important to focus on the important things. That's what Matthew 6:25-34 is trying to tell us. And we need to minimize the distraction. Sometimes we get frustrated because we've done a lot of work around the church, or we've done a lot of work around our family. Maybe it was Thanksgiving and we cooked all of this food and nobody even said thanks to us. So another point of stress and frustration sometimes can be the house of God. I would have to admit with you, I love coming to church. I love coming here. I come here almost every day of my life. I come here. But there are some times I don't really want to come here, because there's other people here. And other people stress me out sometimes. Isn't that true? Is that true with you? How many of you agree that other people stress them out at times? Brad, you never get stressed out by nobody? What's your secret, man? It's peppermints, isn't it? Sometimes we cook, we clean. I don't know how many times Sister Kayla's put those pots and pans away in the kitchen. And you know what? Next time she cooks tonight, CIP, she's going to be putting the same old pots and pans away. I've gone through this church and I've picked up candy wrappers. I picked up Kleenexes. Lord, you have no idea what I picked up off these floors. Some things it's unrecognizable, and we have to have the staff come around to say, what really is this? But you deal with it. Because you know what? The next service, the next people that come in are going to leave the same stuff around. Some people, every pair of pants they own has a hole in it, and the wrappers fall through that hole. It's got to be. Why else would you do it? We get tired. We get tired and we become weary in well-doing. And we ask ourselves, what's the point of doing all of this good when nobody recognizes me or pats me on the back for it? I spent 4 hours cleaning, and tomorrow I got to come back and finish. I spent 10 hours studying for this message and 40 minutes to deliver it, and nobody even paid any attention. I'll get over it. You'll get over it. We'll get over it. At other times, we get frustrated and we get impatient. We're dealing with the same old antagonistic things. We want things to change. We want things to get easier. Our schedules at times can just kill us. Just kill us. You see, sometimes, folks, we need patience. When they say patience is a virtue, boy, it's got to be way up there in virtues, because we don't have a lot of it anymore, do we? Ever notice that? Especially this time of year. You go into the store, if they don't have what you want right now, you're not going to wait for 2 days for them to order. My goodness, you can order stuff in the morning, and by the next morning, it's on your desk. But we don't have patience for that. I think I got one in Janesville. It's 45 minutes away. Yeah, but I need it today. What do you need it today for? Well, I don't know. But that we don't even know why we need it. We're just used to having to have stuff right now. That's the way we all are becoming. Our schedules can kill us. But see, we become frustrated. And I'm going to wrap this up. I really am going to wrap this up so for musicians can come. We become frustrated. We get tired sometimes of our need to grow spiritually. Now, some of you are going to get real quiet on me here. But we push and we push and we push and we push to grow. Sometimes we don't always understand why is a pastor pushing for this, or why is work? Why do we got to do this now? And we get tired of growing. And sometimes we even get tired of growing in God. A sign of that, if you're tired of growing in God, is how happily we accept change. That tells you right there whether or not you're tired of growing in God. We get tired of our need to grow. We get tired sometimes because we feel like we're the only one here that doesn't have it all together. And when pastor gets up and preaches, we think he's always talking about us, and I'm so sick and tired of pastor always. I'm not going to sit on a front row anymore. I want to go sit in the back so that he can't see me. And I'll sit behind this family because their kids are always rambunctious, and they'll be looking at their kids. They won't even know I'm here. I can sneak in and sneak out because I'm tired of being that weak link in the chain all the time. And we just beat ourselves up. Devil don't even have to do nothing. He just sit back and watch us self-destruct on a church pew. God's trying to instill faith. Pastors trying to instill faith. Listen, you're not the only one that's ever just been a loser sometimes, continually in church. We all are sometimes continually in church. We don't always come in here. Listen, you think I come in here every time and I really want to preach? Man, sometimes I'm looking through that book and I'm like, what illness? No, I'm just kidding. I don't always feel like getting up. Sometimes I'm tired. I'm like, Lord, I just want to get this done. And the people are saying, Lord, please help them get this done. So here's Caleb. Through all of this junk that this poor man had to deal with, stuff that was imposed upon him by choices that other people made, here Caleb is, 85 years old. Caleb's faith in God was not shaken by his circumstances and situations in his life. He put up with a whole lot of extra junk because people didn't believe. Caleb's faith in God was not shaken by his circumstance. If we're going to move forward, church, and you're going to climb the mountains that God has placed in front of you, we too must express our confidence in God and his ability to give us the victory that we need. Caleb had been through difficult days, wandering 40 years of his life in the desert. But instead of coming into the promised land, elder, broken down, worn out, and tired, he came in to the promised land with an unparalleled strength and resolve in his life that I am this close to my mountain. He didn't look at that mountain, Brother Millen, as an uphill climb and an uphill battle and a fight of his life. He looked at that mountain as the greatest promise that God could ever give to a man. You see, when we face a mountain and climb to victory, our lives become a blessing to other people. Some of you have climbed mountains that I sometimes shake my head if I could even get up the foothills. But I listened a week or two ago on a Wednesday night of some of the mountains some of you have had to climb, and your climb up your mountain has been a tremendous blessing to my life. If we can stand. You see, God is the only God that can take challenges and hurts and heartaches in your life and use it to affect others. I love the story of Caleb. Give me my mountain, Britt. Give me my mountain. God, you promised this. You promised this. I'm going to claim it. I don't know how long it's going to take me to get to the top of it. I don't even know what the view is going to look like from up there. But it doesn't matter. You see, but Jesus Christ, he made all of this possible. Because he walked up a mountain that no one else was willing to climb. He climbed it by himself under extreme stress and duress. And yet, it was through climbing that mountain that he gave us victory over everything. everything. And he has freely offered the gift of life, the gift of salvation to anyone, anyone who asks of him. You see, church, therein lies, we titled this two-part series, Everything Worthwhile is Uphill. Therein lies the power to climb those mountains that we have to climb in our lives. And Sister Brittany would begin to sing, and I want to open up this altar. You don't have to be perfect. God doesn't expect perfection. He expects willingness. He likes persistence. God says, come down here, all you that are weary and well-doing. All of you that are weary and broken. All of you, if you're frustrated right now in your life because things aren't going.